Hi, everyone. I'm Tara Mont, and you're listening to the Trust and Thrive with Tara Mont podcast, where you can find a new episode released every Thrive Thursday. I am a current clinical psychology graduate student, passionate about all things to do with mental health, relationships, healing, self-reflection, and other topics that influence us in our everyday lives. I created this podcast to hopefully inspire others to live their most authentic life and to share insightful and honest conversations with everyday individuals and informed professionals. Although the show is not a replacement for therapy, I hope the conversations had can inspire you to look within, to practice self-compassion, to gain more awareness, and to trust the process of your unique journey. If you resonate with the message of Trust and Thrive, make sure to subscribe and stay tuned. You can also stay connected by following me on Instagram at Trust and Thrive. Thank you for being here. Now let's get right into this week's episode. Welcome back to Trust and Thrive, everyone. I hope you are doing well. I hope you are having a lovely start to May. So today I'm going to be sharing a conversation that I had about 2 months ago. I am sharing it now because I thought it would be a very insightful conversation to share right before Mother's Day. So if you're in the US specifically, Mother's Day is this Sunday. If you're listening to this right when it came out, it's this Sunday, May 9th. I know you may see posts, you may see people talking about their relationship with their mothers that they love. And I'm personally very grateful that I have a close relationship with my mother and I love her. But we have our moments, of course. And I also realize that not everyone has that type of relationship or even has their mother in their lives. Some people have two fathers. Some people are adopted. They may not know their biological mother, or they don't have a mother they were adopted by. Some people's mothers may have passed away. They may not have had the chance to get to know their mothers, or they may not have a good relationship with their mothers, or you have a great relationship with your mother. Whatever the case may be, I hope you know you are not alone. Every family looks different. Every person's relationship with, you know, whether it's their parents or grandparents or foster care system, whoever they were raised by, that's their story. That's your story. And you are not alone in it. And you don't have to have one specific way. You don't have to have the perfect relationship with your mother to be worthy to grow up and have a great life. I'm thinking of everyone who Mother's Day may be triggering for and may hurt them. They may be grieving, and that can be a death. That can be just not having a relationship with them anymore. That can be not knowing who they are. And that could be not being raised by one, and that's okay. So I'm sending love to you all before we get into this episode. And I personally really, really enjoyed this conversation with this guest. Her name is Josie Rosario. Josie is a New York City-based licensed therapist who specializes in helping individuals and couples break relational and generational patterns through therapy and ancestral healing. Outside of that role, Josie is the founder and CEO of The Healing Strategy, a business coaching company exclusively for mental health therapists. Josie identifies as a Black, Dominican American, bilingual and bicultural, cisgendered, heterosexual woman. She graduated with distinction from Columbia's University School of Social Work, and she's currently training to be a certified couples and family therapist at the Ackerman Institute for the Family in New York City. So in this episode, we touch on breaking cycles, breaking generational patterns, being aware of our generational patterns, generational trauma, understanding our ancestors better to better understand ourselves and to create a better outcome for future generations. So I personally love this conversation. Even though we're not specifically talking about mothers and Mother's Day or anything, I think it really relates to the importance of reflecting on our ancestors, whether it is a mother, grandmother you may have, a father, grandfather, whoever it is that may have certain beliefs and thoughts that you are holding on to and that you're trying to work on, you're trying to let go. What was normal for you and your family and your upbringing that you may not want to continue? And what do you want to keep? So to learn more about Josie, you can follow her at Josie Rosario NYC You can also visit the Instagram for The Healing Strategy, which is at The Healing Strategy. And you can also find me on Instagram at Trust and Thrive. So that being said, let's get right into my conversation with Josie. Hi, Josie. Thank you so much for being on the show. I really appreciate it.
Hi, Tara. Thank you so much for having me. I'm so excited to be here.
Thank you. I'm super excited to get into this topic. It's a really important one. So can you first start off telling us what you do and a little more about yourself?
Yeah. So I am a New York City-based licensed therapist. And outside of that role, I also am a business coach for therapists. And in particular, I help them set up their businesses or private practices and really do so in a way that, you know, supports them, helps them do good, but also do well.
Amazing. And I know you touch on the idea of breaking generational patterns, relational patterns, trauma cycles. Can you tell us a little bit about what inspired you to focus on that topic or those topics and what in general that may look like for someone who doesn't know?
Yeah, totally. What inspired me? So I am training currently. I'm in a 4-year training program, certification program, to be a couples and family therapist. So I am a social worker. That's what my degree is in. And my specialty when it comes to therapy and this type of work is in couples and family therapy. And so what inspired me is that kind of how I got to that. It's a really interesting story. So many, many years ago, I was, you know, in my early 20s and in like a long-term relationship that I probably was too young to be in. But, you know, there I was and was really struggling in my relationship. We were like 3 years in. And, you know, we decided to give couples therapy a go. And so, you know, we went and, you know, first couple of sessions, you know, they're very, you know, their assessment, asking questions, taking history, all of that. Maybe like the second or third session, you know, the therapist, you know, was like, you know, I'd like to see you next week. And I remember turning to my partner at the time and like talking to him about like something that we had going on. And the therapist is, you know, interrupts me and is like, no, I want to see you next week. And I was like, so offended. Like, what do you mean you want to see me? You know, like I'm not the problem. He's the problem, you know, early 20 something, you know, chronicles, I guess. And, you know, that therapist really changed my life after that. You know, that relationship ended, but I ended up seeing that therapist for a little bit over a year, became my individual therapist, and really like just flipped everything on its head. You know, I realized just how much of my own trauma was being played out in my amorous relationships, my friendships, you know. I later realized, and I also just like learned about just all the trauma, right? Like I had a name, the trauma that I'd experienced, you know, as a kid and as a young adult, not only just like in my family, but also as a woman, as a Black woman, as a Black woman in mostly, you know, spaces that center white folks and white supremacy and white culture. And so all of that was coming out of my relationship. And so, you know, since then I've been, you know, a therapy goer, you know, currently have my own therapist as well. But, you know, since then, I've just been really fascinated with relationships and not just amorous relationships, but how do we relate in general? How do we learn like the templates when it comes to, you know, the relationships that we have as adults? And so, you know, I didn't realize until much later that, you know, this is the work, my sole purpose. This is the work that I've always, you know, wanted to do. But, you know, once I got into it, it was like, you know, two puzzle pieces that fit. It was just beautiful. And sometimes I have to pinch myself because I'm doing the work that I really genuinely, truly love.
That is so amazing. And I think so many people could relate to that of like, you know, my partner is the problem or someone else is the problem when you're not really reflecting on like your patterns and yourself in general. And so even like with your clients and work, do you see often that people maybe steer more towards those patterns that they witnessed growing up, whether it is like a relationship and they look at their parents, if they had two parents, or they look at just their family dynamics and they repeat that even if it necessarily isn't healthy?
For sure. I mean, you know, but what we don't know, we just repeat, right? What doesn't get processed gets transmitted. And so, you know, with my clients, yeah, you know, we always kind of have to go home as a trained couples and family therapist. That's usually where I start. Like, I want to know, like, how you came to be who you are. Like, who am I seeing right now? Like, how did you come to be, right? What experiences shaped, you know, not only who you are, but how you think, what are the stories, right? What are the beliefs, the underlying premises that impacts you and impact the decisions that you make and how you move about in the world? And so, yeah, we always go there. You know, a lot of clients, you know, they'll like humor me and like, yeah, you know, we'll talk about home and growing up, but a lot of folks don't want to do that. You know, they want, you know, like, this is a problem at hand, let's fix the problem at hand. And so, you know, sometimes it is a lot of psychoeducation or just helping folks understand, like, this is why it's so important. It doesn't mean we're going to stay there, you know, throughout the whole time we're working together, but we need to really understand so that we can really understand what's happening right now.
And definitely, I know you talk about generational patterns too. And I imagine for anyone who has like never heard of that idea, it can be very overwhelming of like, do I have to carry everything and change all these patterns that happen generationally? So can you talk about maybe like a first step or what that can look like for someone who noticed for the first time, I don't want to repeat this dynamic, or I don't want to necessarily take on this baggage or something that my mom or my father or whoever raised me would do?
Yeah, I think that, you know, for folks who, one, have the awareness that they are currently caught in a cycle or a pattern that just has been repeated, you know, throughout generations, I think that, you know, step number one is one, like, immense amounts of compassion, like self-compassion. You know, being a cycle breaker, especially a generational cycle breaker, is hard work. I always talk about this with my clients. I share my own personal experiences, you know, kind of like a cycle breaker in my family, you know, but also on Instagram, because I think it's important for folks to understand that, you know, it's not like you wake up one day and you say, yeah, I'm going to be a cycle breaker today. Great. Like, let's break the cycle. Let me cut it. Okay, that's it. It's done. Like, it's not the way it works. It's a lot of hard work. It is costly. And what I mean by that is that, you know, it's going to take emotional labor from us. And, you know, it's going to take a little bit more patience from us. It's just going to take a little bit more, because we're literally paving the way for those that are going to come after us, whether that's siblings, whether that's children, grandchildren, you know, whomever that is. And so that's the first thing I would say. I'd also say that it's important to keep in mind that this is a process, right? You know, if you are the cycle breaker in your family, you are really kind of like undoing or, you know, redefining things, patterns, beliefs, premises that have been in your family for generations, you know, like not even like a couple of years, talking about like decades, right? And so it can feel like, oh my gosh, is this ever going to be done? And I think I recently shared on Instagram, right, that like healing, like we're never done. Right? Like, healing happens in layers. You know, every single time that you kind of like uncover, you know, or you rather you get to a place where you are feeling like, okay, I kind of got this. All right. I've done something here. You uncover something else, you know, that might need some attention. And that's okay. That doesn't mean that you're not working fast enough, that you're not doing enough. It's just kind of the way that it is. And, you know, hopefully by you kind of doing your work, you know, you can kind of marshal the support of other folks that are coming after you to support you in creating a different cycle, you know, in your family. So those are the couple of things that I would say for folks that are kind of the cycle breakers in their families.
You mentioned so many good points too, because I think there is often a misconception about healing that it's a destination or that you're cured or that you fixed everything and that it's like you just reached this point. It's a lifelong journey. It's a never-ending journey. And so I think that self-compassion aspect is so important, because say they want to break a certain pattern and then they catch themselves. They're like, oh, I did exactly what I said I wouldn't do, or I repeated this pattern, or I'm not happy with myself. And so do you see that often where people, maybe there's like this perfectionist thinking of, I have to do it exactly right, whether it's raising my kids or being in this new relationship or just shedding this pattern in general?
Definitely, all the time, you know, it's a function of the society that we live in, right? It's a society that tells us you have to be perfect. You have to do this perfectly. Like even healing is something that you have to do perfectly. You know, even therapy, which is, you know, a place where you could come and learn, even there, you have to kind of show up knowing all of these things, which is wild. But again, it makes sense. Something that I usually tell my clients is that, you know, when you're learning a new skill, it is completely okay to revert back to what you know. It's the same idea as, you know, when a baby is learning how to walk. Right? A baby is going to crawl, it's going to stand up, you know, it's going to be a little wobbly, it's going to take a couple of steps, it's going to fall again, and it's going to crawl a little bit until they get stronger and stronger to just not have to crawl, and they'll just walk. It's the same thing with healing. And so just like we wouldn't get upset at a baby who's learning a new skill, we have to offer ourselves kind of the same grace when it comes to learning a new pattern. You know, again, how is it that you've been doing things for years a certain way and that, you know, you've been in therapy for a couple of months, I don't know, just as an example, and all of a sudden you're going to get it right. So again, it's just all this like unlearning that needs to happen, not just in terms of this healing work, but just in the ways that we think and that we move.
No, definitely. And I think it's great that you went to therapy and you had that realization even just from couples therapy. But a lot of people, they don't, for example, they're not aware of that. And maybe they're so used to certain patterns and they think, oh, well, this isn't working out. Or they're used to people in their family exploding over conflict or something as simple as that, where they don't know what is healthy and what isn't healthy. It's just normal to them. And so what advice would you give to someone who wants to explore these patterns that they maybe want to shed, but they don't even know where to start or what that looks like?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think there's so many different ways to kind of begin on that process, right? Therapy obviously is one way. I think that there are just so many, you know, just books now out there in terms of, you know, patterns and, you know, self-healing. Two things there, right? Like therapy and books, but then I'm also thinking about social media. You know, I'm clearly a really big fan of social media and just in the way that we can, you know, get information and have access to information from reputable sources, right? There's so many therapists like myself out there, you know, that are putting out content, whether that's in posts, whether that's blogs, that are just really educational in nature. And I think that, you know, it's all about awareness. You know, I think that we're all intuitive, right? We all have intuition. And if we pay close enough attention, our intuition will tell us, like, you know, there's something here that, not that it's not right, but there's something here that may need attention, you know? And if you're committed enough to have a different experience, you don't need to have like a plan. But, you know, if you are committed to having a different experience, then that commitment will lead you to research, will lead you to different places. And that's a great place to be. Again, moving away from this notion of getting it right or being healed or doing like, you know, healing in the perfect way. You know, I think that'll just like give you a little bit more space to figure it on your own. There's a reason why, you know, people talk about it as a journey or as a process, because everyone comes to it differently. You know, and no one way is better than the other. It's just everyone is at their place and that's perfectly okay.
Exactly. And I'm glad you mentioned that no way is the same, because it's just in general, we all have very different intersecting identities. Everyone has their own different patterns and journey that they're on. And so can you talk about the importance of recognizing your intersecting identities and how they play into effect in life and what that maybe looks like as a Black woman and breaking those trauma cycles that maybe I don't have and other people have?
Yeah. Again, you know, kind of going back to that awareness, if you are not aware that you do have intersecting identities, you know, then it's going to be really hard to kind of think or be able to reflect about how all these identities kind of come together to shape your experience. I have a great deal of educational privilege, right? I have 3 degrees. You know, 2 of them are from Ivy League schools. You know, I went to boarding school. You know, I participated in, you know, very, I would say, like prestigious programs like Teach for America. And so I have a ton of privilege from in one way. But then I also have, you know, subjugated identities as a woman, as a Black woman, you know, as a daughter of immigrants, as, you know, I am, my first language is Spanish. you know, I'm bicultural. For a long time, like most of my 20s, I was just oblivious, completely oblivious to microaggressions, to racism, to, you know, both overt and covert, to just like all the ways that I attempted to feel worthy, but also have others treat me with dignity by using all of my educational privilege, right? And so it wasn't until kind of, I was really, you know, got the language, right? Learned about microaggressions, learned about what does it mean to be really, yes, I've always known what it's like to be a Black woman, but to really have language, for example, to think about, reflect my experience. It wasn't until then that I was able to like, it's almost like the heavens opened for me a little bit, because I was able to really give space to my experience, right? For a long time, because I wasn't aware, parts of my experience and really parts of me were like, you know, shunned, right? They were hidden. They were out of my awareness. And so, you know, with that knowledge, I am able to feel more in control, right? Of, you know, my career for sure, but just of myself from a personal perspective. And so again, I think that's why it's just awareness and just education is so important, because that's really where everything begins. I think that, you know, my responsibility, one of the biggest responsibility, not only as a therapist, but just as a healer, is really to educate, right? Really to put language to experiences that a lot of people are having, but may not necessarily know that it's even a thing, that it has a name. And that within itself can just be so validating, and so it can just be so impactful, you know, just to know that the thing that you're going through is actually a thing.
Definitely. I totally agree. And I'm curious too, like if you're comfortable sharing, do you feel like your experience as a bicultural and bilingual woman is different in the sense of, because I think like I'm Persian, both my parents are Persian. So I think there are certain cycles and patterns that I want to break within that culture. Do you feel like there's a different weight that you place on a certain culture? Was there a different kind of pressure? What was that like?
Yeah. I identify as bicultural, you know, kind of like really straddling between Dominican culture and United Statesian, you know, the culture of the US. And so I don't necessarily think that I've ever favored one culture over another or kind of leaned towards one over the other. It's always been like a push and pull. I was born in the States, but grew up between New York and Dominican Republic. And so, you know, it was like, you know, I would be in DR and I would bring things that we would do here, there, and vice versa. And so, you know, I think that when it came to career, you know, in the Dominican Republic, you know, there's certain careers that are, you know, really highly respected. You know, that's like being a doctor, being a lawyer, being an engineer, those types of professions. And I didn't want to be any of those things. I wanted something more interdisciplinary, something that was a little bit of kind of everything. So it was like hard, for example, to have the conversation with my mom around, this is what my major is going to be. This is the career that I'm going to have. Or I want to switch my career. You know, it's just like, what? You don't do that, you know? Or when it comes to, you know, having children, I'm not a mother yet. I'm now in my 30s, but in my 20s, it was like a constant conversation around, you know, when are you going to have children? And, you know, you're getting older and da da da. And so, you know, again, it's just been a lot of conversations, you know, with my family, in particular with my mom around, you know, I love my Dominican culture. I respect it. And also there are just certain aspects of that culture that they just don't resonate with me. That doesn't make me any less Dominican. It's just that as a bicultural woman, you know, I do have the privilege, and I do recognize that as privilege, to be able to kind of pick, you know, take the things from certain cultures that I want and reject the others that just don't align with me, right? I have an older brother, you know, and it's the same thing with him. There's certain things about our Dominican culture that he fully accepts that I do not, and vice versa. And so I think, again, just kind of like healing, it's an ongoing process. It's a practice, really, of as I evolve as a human being, it's really about being clear what's important to me and, you know, what aspects of these two cultures kind of fit in that. It's not like a perfect answer, but again, I would say that it's more of a practice.
I appreciate you sharing that. And I didn't expect, you know, a specific answer. I can imagine, like, for anyone, it's not so simple in their healing process, their journey. There's no like one right way to do it. And so thank you for sharing that. I do appreciate that. And I know you brought the example up of your mother. And I think that's such a good point of if it's people are so used to doing things a certain way, and you're kind of the first to say, well, I don't want to pursue this career or have a child by this age or even get married or even just follow this specific pattern, that can, you know, maybe even rupture certain relationships, whether it is within your family or extended family or friends, especially if you're so used to doing things a certain way and people know you that way. So can you talk about how normal it is to maybe lose certain relationships and to struggle? And that's part of the process. It's not always obviously glamorous when it comes to healing and figuring out who you want to be.
Yeah, that's such a great question. I was literally having this conversation with my mom last weekend, you know, because, you know, she just has certain expectations of me as her daughter. I think a couple of things here. One of the words that kind of comes to mind is boundaries, right? And just how much boundaries are kind of needed in order to be able to do this work. I think that as someone who is multicultural or bicultural, and kind of like lives at the intersection of multiple things, there's always this fear, right? Am I not going to belong? You know, if I honor this thing that feels good to me, am I going to lose membership to my family, my culture, you know, this organization, you know, whatever the thing is. And that's a real risk, right? That I think we take when we make the decision to live our lives in ways that truly honor us. We have to start thinking at some point in our lives, you know, what is the thing that I'm belonging to? And does this thing make sense? Does this thing align with who I am right now, but also with who I'm becoming? And sometimes that's our families, right? Which really suck, right? Like it really hurts. I'm not going to sugarcoat that. Like it's hard, you know? And also you are the one, right? Like as an adult, like you have to decide what kind of life do you want to live, right? What kind of legacy do you want to have? And so, yeah, there is going to be a little bit of loss. I think that there's just an enormous amount of grieving that's inherent in any type of healing work that you do, that A, we don't talk enough about, and two, can like really take you by surprise. You know, you may be healing the loss of just the ways of doing things, right? You may be grieving the loss of a relationship. You may be grieving, you know, former versions of yourself. But yeah, there is loss that's inherent in this type of work, that is inherent in being like a cultural straddler or being the first one in anything, be it your family, an organization, you know, whatever, a friend group, to do something different. You know, you're literally breaking away from the pack, and that has meaning, obviously.
Yeah, definitely. And I'm glad you brought up boundaries, because that's such a key point in all of this. And, you know, there are a lot of cultures and families who maybe don't even know what a boundary looks like. I know I didn't really understand a boundary until like a few years ago. And so can you talk about, I know obviously looks different for every culture and dynamic, but what can that look like for someone who has no idea how to set a boundary?
Yeah. Boundaries, I think, is like an interesting concept. One, because it's like so trendy, right? Like everyone's talking about boundaries. And I think that a lot of times folks don't quite understand what boundaries are. And so I think that's obviously step number one. As you see, it's going to be a theme always with me in terms of, you know, awareness and education. But the way that I like to think about boundaries is, you know, what conditions need to exist for a yes. And I love that definition, because a lot of times people think of boundaries as like limits or walls, or like, no, I'm not going to allow, no. Not necessarily. It's more so about centering what you need to happen for the relationship, for the condition, you know, for the situation to work for you, right? So I think that that definition really forces people to center themselves and really think about, what do I need and what do I want? Right. And so I actually was just working on some content for my Instagram for later this week that talks about this, right? In the Latinx culture, for example, there's a term called familismo, which is it's like a value system almost that really centers the family, that, you know, centers the needs of the collective of the family over the needs of any individual one person, right? The troubleshooting of problems happen in the collective, right? It's not a situation, you know, it's almost like the difference between a collectivist individualistic culture society. And so how do boundaries fit in all of that? You know, I love that value, you know, familismo, and that I know that if I'm struggling with something, you know, I feel like I have a team behind me. I don't have to figure it out on my own, right? That we can pull together our resources, not just financially, for example, but just our, you know, intellectual resources to kind of figure out how to troubleshoot or problem solve an issue that one person is having, and also any boundaries, right? And so I think that this is really where, no matter what culture you come from, I think this is where it's really important to hold the both ends. And this is hard. I know it is a practice, but to be able to hold multiple perspectives, right? That there, you know, and again, just kind of continue with this topic, there are elements of familismo that I love and that I cherish. And also, right, I have my boundaries and I honor those too. And so, you know, it could be that someone in my family comes to me expecting for me to fix an issue that they're going through, right? That's like familismo coming through. But then what's my boundary? Like, how does my boundary intersect or interact with that? And the way that it does is that, you know, I kind of have to figure out, well, you know, how much of this is really mine? How much of this do I really have capacity for? Not just, you know, in like the tangible concrete things, but how much like emotional capacity do I have for this? Do I even want to deal with this? Can I say no? Right. So like, these are all the questions that I would ask myself to ensure that I am honoring my boundaries, but also, you know, honoring this value system that's important in my culture. Right. So again, it's kind of like we were saying before, there's no clear cut answer, that this is like, this is the work, right? This is the work that we talk about. You know, I always say that the work happens outside of therapy, but, and this is an example, right? How do you negotiate all of these different things so that it's not just a binary yes or no, black or white? You know, and so again, it's very much a practice when it comes to honoring like your boundaries, but also cultural norms.
Definitely. And even I think when people recognize certain patterns, like say my parent was too strict, so I'm going to be completely lenient, or I never want to be like this person, and you forget to maybe pick and choose the areas that you like and that you want to pass on. And I think there's a lot of resentment that people may build up. So they think, okay, well, I can't acknowledge that there are great parts about this culture or person that I want to pass on and I like. And so I appreciate that you brought that up. And do you see that often maybe with your clients and work that people have to over time kind of like shift? Maybe they go to an extreme of, I've never set boundaries, so I'm going to set really extreme boundaries, and then kind of maybe find a middle ground over time.
Totally. I mean, if we have awareness of the thing that didn't work for us or that causes pain, you know, we're as human beings, we are very much pain avoidant, obviously, more so than we are pleasure seeking. Yeah, it makes perfect sense, right? Like that's our brain doing its job, right? We're gonna run away from that. We're gonna make sure that we avoid that pain, you know, at all costs until it becomes maladaptive and it gets in the way of the things that you want to achieve, the experiences that you want to have. And so typically that's usually the point where folks, I feel, you know, come to therapy or realize, you know, there's this thing that's happening that I'm doing that isn't working, you know, and they may not, you know, talk about it in the way that I just have, but they recognize that there's a pattern, a behavior, a set of beliefs that are really getting in the way. And they're at the point where they want to do something about it, right? Because there's always, I always talk about the continuum for like readiness for therapy, right? Like you have to be at a place where you're ready to when you want to change. We don't want to change. That's okay. You know, that's totally your prerogative, but you're also going to continue to have the same experience, right? And so, yeah, typically, you know, clients and folks tend to go all the way to one side. And then when it becomes a problem, then they seek the support to kind of get them to a place that makes sense.
And I know before, you know, we talked about relationships a little bit and you mentioned your relationship, but can you maybe explain how not reflecting on your certain patterns and beliefs may, how that in general may really harm a relationship if both individuals are just blaming the person and saying this is how it is or this is what I know? And obviously two people coming from completely different, you know, dynamics, families, and maybe cultures, how that can really affect both of them if they don't do that inner work themselves.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, there's a lot of projection, right? Projecting that happens. You know, as was the case, you know, the example that I gave of me, you know, when I was younger, you know, it's just your all the things that you're like unaware of is just, it's coming out in the, not only on your partner, but also on the relationship, right? We may be recreating the things that are there unconsciously and possibly expecting a different result, right? It's not uncommon for us to, again, unconsciously think of our partners as, you know, one of our parents, you know, and kind of expecting our partners to do the thing that our parents didn't do, right? Or to not do the thing that our parents did, right? That happens quite often. I think that's why I'm so fascinated by both couples and family work, because all of our stuff, all of our unresolved, unexplored stuff comes out in our amorous relationships, right? Obviously, given the intimacy of them. So yeah, you know, so projecting, reenactments are really big. And a lot of times too, we're attempting to prove something to ourselves, you know, I am worthy, I am lovable, I can do this thing in this particular way. You know, we kind of use our partners and our relationships as a way to prove to ourselves, you know, whatever that belief is, you know, which again, it's just, are we really present in our relationship? Are we really choosing our relationship? Are we really awake to the relationship and to our lives? I think that by and large, again, given the society and the culture that we live in here in the US, we're asleep, right? We're in a trance. We are not awake and aware to why we do what we do and how that's impacting us. Right. I think that is seen by the divorce rates, that's seen by the number of folks, you know, that struggle with anxiety and depression. We live in a capitalistic society that literally makes their money by making us feel, you know, unwell, not enough, et cetera. We do the work to really awaken to ourselves and why we do what we do without judgment, you know, we can feel a lot more in control because then we can take the steps to have a different experience.
Mm-hmm. And even just with social media now, if you see other couples, you know, post like a minute of their life, you think, oh, well, it has to be that way. There's this level of expectations in so many different areas now. And so even just when it comes to having realizations of wanting to break patterns, and whether it's with your family or loved ones, do you feel like there has to be some level of acceptance and maybe grief? Because say you think, I don't want to repeat what my grandmother and all the women in my family have done, for example, in certain areas. And you're like, Mom, join me, sisters, join me. And it's this level of realizing that some people are okay with how it is and that's fine with them. And you have to accept that just because you want to change or you want to break certain patterns does not mean everyone around you will want to join you on your journey or on their journey, and that there is grief that may come in that of having that acceptance.
Yeah, it's so wild. It's almost like you're reading my content calendar. I just wrote some content, I think for next week around this. And yeah, and that you can't take everyone with you. Not everyone is going to want to or have the wherewithal to come with you on this journey, on the healing, on the up-leveling, you know, however you want to call it. Not everyone is gonna want to do that or be able to. And that's gonna bring up some feelings. I know that for me, for a while, it brought feelings of guilt. You know, my mom and my grandmother made all these sacrifices for me to be in this country and have all of the things that I have. And how is it now that I am like, quote unquote, surpassing them? I have to do a lot of work in terms of reframing that and really, really seeing it for what it is, you know, that I'm standing on their shoulders. They didn't have shoulders to stand on, but I'm standing on their shoulders because they want me to live this life, right? Not necessarily because it's about all of us being on the same level, if you will. And I hate the word level, right? That's the only one that kind of comes to mind. But yeah, there is a lot of that. And again, kind of going back to this idea of being a cycle breaker, that can be lonely. It can absolutely be lonely. And that's a sacrifice sometimes that we have to make as cycle breaker, knowing that we kind of have to go on this particular path on our own because the people around us, again, either don't want to or just can't, right? Because they don't have the wherewithal to do so. So I'm really glad you mentioned that because, again, I think that that's the part of healing and pattern breaking that like we don't talk about. Again, we just want to look at the outcome, you know, what this healed, quote unquote, look like. But there's just so much that happens in the middle that can be really destabilizing and jarring for sure.
And even with that said, I think we imagine that if we're breaking a cycle, it must be a good feeling or it must be something we're glad to get rid of. But often it can be so uncomfortable and come with those feelings of guilt and that pressure. And even like maybe some sense of not knowing whether or not it's right and feeling torn. And so can you talk about how normal it is to feel all these uncomfortable emotions? And just because it's not easy and pleasant to do, it doesn't mean you're doing the wrong thing.
Yeah. Just because it doesn't feel good doesn't mean that it's not right, you know? And that's in particular when it comes to healing, obviously. You know, but it's almost like detoxing, you know, where, you know, if you are doing like a food detox, you know, like it's gonna suck, you know, you may throw up, you may, you know, feel fatigue, brain fog, all like literally just as all of the toxins are just leaving your body, like you are going to feel the effects of it. It's the same thing when it comes to cycle breaking. You know, you are going to feel like, whoa, what is happening, right? I mean, you probably know this as a MFT student, right? But as families, we're systems, right? We belong to a system. And, you know, when one piece of the system changes, the entire system has to change, right? And that change, you know, like there needs to be some like recalibration that happens. There needs to, you know, it's going to be unstable for a little bit. And again, that doesn't necessarily mean that it's going to be unstable forever. Again, it's just part of the process. Just like, you know, we have to get rid of things to make space for new things. So again, you know, resistance, I guess, if you want to call it that, resistance is part of the process, not proof that the process doesn't work.
100%. And it makes me think of even just systemic change. And overall, this show is about living your most authentic life. And I know we talked about listening to yourself and honoring your needs. So can you maybe explain what living your most authentic life means and how to understand what that may look like if you're so used to fitting the image other people expect of you?
Yeah. Amazing question. You know, you have to, you know, a lot of times when we talk about healing in this work, it's, you know, I want to do it for my family. I want to do it for my partner. I want to do it for, you know, whatever, something outside of us or like something in the future. You know, you have to begin with like really getting to know who you are and what matters to you, right? Obviously, that's a process that's going to take some time. I feel like that's the only way that you can fully know how to live your most authentic life. You know, for me, I mean, I think sometimes of myself as like different versions, you know, like Josie 1.0, you know, I'm maybe at like Josie like 7.0 at this point. But for me right now, living an authentic life means being whole and being well. That's it. It's really simple. And what does wholeness mean, right? And when I think about that, it's about, you know, like what kind of experiences do I want to have in my life, right? I'm not talking about like, what do I want to have like tangibly, right? But like, what kind of experiences do I want to have? What kind of partnerships do I want to have? What kind of friendships do I want to have? You know, I want to wake up every day feeling like good ass life. And, you know, I do wake up every day with an immense feeling of like gratitude because I am crafting that, right? And I've had to make a lot of sacrifices. And again, sacrifices doesn't mean that I've had to struggle, right? Sacrifice does not mean that. But, you know, if I want to have a life that is authentic, that feels whole, then that means that I need to move in the way that gives me that, right? And sometimes that looks like spending less time on social media. Sometimes that looks spending more time resting, right? Sometimes that you know, that looks like, you know, having really difficult conversations. Again, right? Like, this stuff is not all like rainbows and unicorns all the time. But again, it doesn't always mean that it's going to, you know, involve suffering and pain and trauma and all of that. It's, you know, discomfort, right? We have to get really close to and comfortable with discomfort, because that's where the change happens, right? We see it all everywhere, right? And like frames and inspirational quotes and all of that. But it's true, right? Having those difficult conversations, looking at your money, for example, figuring, you know, getting your financial life in order, you know, that used to be really uncomfortable for me. But only, you know, kind of going through it, am I at a place where I feel really good and I do have a handle on money, for example. And so, yeah, that's what I think when I think about like living authentically.
I love that. And I definitely, you know, I'm a child of immigrants too. I understand the guilt. And I also think it's a disservice if I were to just repeat certain patterns and to fit an image of what others expect of me. Because if anything, I am creating a life that is authentic to me. And that's the sacrifice that my parents made, so that I can do that. If I don't take advantage of that, then it almost feels like, you know, I am doing a disservice. So I completely understand that. I wanted to ask if you can lastly explain ancestral healing. And I guess for someone who, once again, feels like they want to start this work and they don't know where to start, what is a good first step for someone who thinks this is just too much for me?
Yeah. So ancestral healing, I think that's also like super buzzy now as well. But it encapsulates just like so many different ways to do pattern breaking, whether that's like from your family or like your lineage, literally. And so I very much believe that by you healing yourself, you can heal your ancestors. Right. That I very much believe that. And that can happen, for example, through therapy. Then there's also, you know, energy work that can be done, trance ritual work that can be done where you're literally connecting with ancestors, you know, from your lineage, and really building a relationship with them, you know, really understanding, you know, the trauma that you're carrying from a particular lineage. And so there's so much that you can kind of do there, right? And that's more like in the metaphysical world, more energy work, more esoteric. So I think that for anyone who is really has the awareness that, you know, I'm repeating something, has maybe identified this is coming from my family, which typically that's, you know, that's kind of where most of our patterns come from. You kind of choose what feels good to you. I think that, again, one of the benefits of social media, of the internet, of just like having so much information at our fingertips is that, you know, we can really kind of choose our own adventure. Also understanding that we have to give ourselves permission to do that, right? Give ourselves permission to do this healing work in a way that feels good to us. A lot of times I know that folks can just feel pressure to, you have to have a therapist, you have to do it this way, you have to do this course. You don't have to do anything, right? What is going to feel most authentic to you? Yes, obviously I'm a therapist, big fan of therapy. And therapy is not going to work for everyone. And that's okay. That doesn't mean there's anything wrong with you. That doesn't mean that if you go with, you know, with a coach or with a, you know, and a spiritual coach or any other type of person that can really support you in your journey, it doesn't mean that like one is better than the other, that there's something wrong with you. I think that, you know, again, it's really about honoring yourself and what's going to work for you. And knowing that, you know, maybe, you know, at some point in your journey, what's good, you know, what worked for you once isn't going to work for you anymore, right? And so again, I think that commitment to yourself and to doing things that work for you is, again, being okay with that. You know, I'm going to try this now. Okay, well, maybe that's not going to work. I'm going to try something else, or I'm going to try this, or this is going to work, so I'm going to stick with this. Right. So again, just like kind of going with the whole theme of like honoring yourself and really being authentic to yourself. So again, there's many different ways that you can kind of go and do the ancestral healing work.
And I completely agree in the sense that living your most authentic life and being your authentic self, like healing, isn't a destination either. Our authentic selves are forever changing. And I read somewhere that even with a partner, you have to be ready to attend the funerals of all the past versions of them and yourself, because your partner's changing, you're forever changing. And that's just obviously how life works, healing works. And so overall, I so appreciate you being here. I love touching on this topic. And lastly, I want to ask you what's coming up next for you and your work, and where can listeners give you a follow if they want to learn more and work with you?
Yeah. So lots of exciting things actually happening. And so two of the really exciting things that are happening is that I am launching a therapist community called Whole and Well NYC. That's the name of, that's the handle on Instagram. That really came out of an experience I had just a few months ago. You know, I'm full in my private practice and had a wait list. The wait list grew to like over 100 people in a matter of like months. And, you know, while part of me was like, oh my gosh, this is like, you know, stroking my ego a little bit, I recognize that that's also a problem because that means that there are over 100 people, therapy seekers, that are looking for support and for, you know, many reasons are not able to connect with other incredible therapists. And so, you know, it's not a directory. I think directories are an important part of our mental health ecosystem, but I don't think we need another directory. I think that the way that I want to connect therapy seekers and therapists, particularly therapy seekers of color and therapists of color, is by supporting therapists, giving them the tools and the resources that have been historically withheld from them. And so this collective, this therapist collective is launching later in the spring, which I'm really excited about. So that's one thing. The other really exciting thing is that my therapeutic work is really going to live at the intersection of spirituality and mental health, meaning that I come from a long line of healers with metaphysical gifts and, you know, for some time have kind of been, I wouldn't necessarily say rejecting them, but kind of oblivious to them. And in the past year or so, it's been abundantly clear to me that part of my purpose is to use these gifts to support people in a one-on-one setting in order to really break patterns, break trauma cycles, not only from this lifetime, but from past lifetimes. And so my work is evolving, you know, to really encompass more spiritual based practices. So I'm really excited for that. I'm going to be doing energy readings, you know, so folks are interested in that, especially, you know, with kind of like a mental health bent to it, then, you know, they can follow me and join my newsletter where I will be announcing when I'm open for that.
That sounds incredible. And I love that you incorporate, you know, spiritual healing. I think every culture has their folk rituals. And so I think it's so beautiful to acknowledge that and use that as well. So thank you so much for being here and for your time. I absolutely love the work you do and really appreciate it. Thank you.
Thank you.
What a great topic. I love learning about generational healing, breaking cycles, and how that really helps future generations that we may not even see. We may not even see that the work we're doing now is going to help our kids, if we have kids, their kids, or even just the people around us. That's why I love Josie's work, because no one is perfect. No family is perfect. No generation is perfect. And it is our job to do better than past generations. I believe that. At least for me, I see it as my responsibility to be ethically better, to reflect, to make better choices compared to last generations. I hope when I have kids, because I hope to have kids one day, I hope that they don't say, oh, my childhood was perfect and I wouldn't change a thing. Like, obviously, I'd be thankful to hear that, but I would love if they said, you know, I had a great childhood and I love my family, but I would also do things differently. And I will do things differently. And I will share what I've learned with my family or with others and grow in that way. I don't want to settle for what I know. And I hope future generations won't either. So if you can relate and if you connected with this episode, feel free to reach me, Josie. Let us know what stuck with you and what you would like to learn more about, if maybe it wasn't touched on in this episode, or it's a conversation that you would like to hear in the future, let me know, and I will take that into account. And so you can reach Josie on Instagram at Josie Rosario NYC and at The Healing Strategy. And you can follow me on Instagram and TikTok. I'm trying to post on there more at Trust and Thrive. I will include all of Josie's information in the show notes of this episode. And if you want to leave a rating and review on Apple iTunes, Apple Podcasts, that would mean so much. It really helps the show. And I've been seeing some people leave new ratings, and I want to thank you because it really helps the show and it's so kind of you. And I appreciate any feedback. So please message me, leave a review, let me know what you want to hear on the show, what you've been enjoying, so that you can really feel heard and seen. Because that is the goal. I want you to feel at least one episode that you can connect with and feel less alone. So I'm sending you all love, whether or not you celebrate Mother's Day. If you do, I hope you have a great one, whether you are a mother or you celebrate with your mother or both. I'm sending you love. And if you don't, if you're grieving, if Mother's Day brings up a lot of pain for you, a lot of confusion, mixed emotions, I'll be thinking of you as well and sending you all so much love. Thank you for being here, and I will catch you all next Thrive Thursday.